Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
In her first memoir, New Yorker cartoonist Roz Chass brings her signature wit to the topic of aging parents, spanning the last several years of their lives and told through four color cartoons, family photos and documents, and a narrative as filled with laughs as it is with tears. Her memoir is both comfort and comic relief for anyone experiencing the life-altering loss of elderly parents. While the particulars are certainly Chastian in their idiosyncrasies, the themes are indeed universal. Adult children accepting a parental role, aging, and unstable parents leaving a family home for an institution, dealing with uncomfortable physical intimacies, managing logistics, and hiring strangers to provide the most personal of care. The book is a portrait of two lives at their end and an only child coping as best she can. The name again of the book is Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant? It is a memoir, and it's published by Bloomsbury. Roz Chass, a pleasure to have you back on the program. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
It's a delight. This is one of the most beautiful books I've ever seen. It's really gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
It's. I'll begin there. At what point did you think that you wanted to, A, do this? I guess I'm curious as whether you did this for you initially or it was always an idea to share it with a wider audience.
It's sort of a combination of these things. I mean, I really thought it was an interesting project, but I also think it's a topic that I did want to share with other people. Maybe because in some ways I felt that when I was going through it, I didn't feel like this was a topic that people talked about that much.
Why do you think that is?
Well, it's a really horrible topic. It's something that it's not only seeing your parents age and become, become more and more decrepit. You know that you yourself are heading in that direction. So it's sort of depressing, you know,
Yeah. For
a lot of reasons.
When the time frame on this is, I mean, at the beginning, you're talking the beginning of the book, you're talking about the beginning of the end. So really, this is all kind of starting in the early 2000s, 2001, 2002.
Right.
And
well, the book sort of starts, you could say that it starts in my childhood when I first became aware of who my parents were. But really, essentially, the story in the book starts about 2 days before the World Trade Centers were hit, just totally coincidentally. That day, September 9th, I was living up here in Connecticut. My parents were living in Brooklyn, and I realized I hadn't seen their apartment in so long, and I realized I had to first see them in their natural habitat. They'd come up to visit me many times, but I realized that they were getting older and I needed to see what was going on with them. And that was the beginning of my getting more involved in their lives.
You know, so much of this book resonated with me. I've lost both parents over the last 5 years, although the one difference is that you're an only child, I'm the youngest of five. But there are so many similarities, and yet I can't imagine being the only one dealing with it.
Well, it's funny. I think that they both probably have, there are pluses and minuses.
Yeah.
That, would have been helpful in a lot of ways to have siblings to have gone through this with. On the other hand, I know people with siblings where it just adds to the, you know, there's just so much acrimony and it's, you know, arguments about how to handle the situation. You know, I want mommy to go here. No, that's a terrible idea. You know, so it doesn't, there's pluses and minuses.
When, so you introduce us to your parents, George and Elizabeth, and you are, it's so interesting how you, through this process of caring for them and overseeing all of this, you get to know them even better. And again, for all the good and bad that comes with that, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, I really, I don't think that I had thought about it that much, but I think at least when I was in my early 20s, part of figuring out who I was and was involved getting away from them. And I didn't really think that much ahead, you know. And, yeah, I did get to know them a lot better in ways that I wished I hadn't. But there's really, you know, it's, and there was really no escape from it.
When, and their personalities become magnified, right? I mean, everything that you experienced, it sort of, it gives, it almost comes into a context when you better understand it, it seems.
Well, yeah. And also, you know, any idea that people have that, you know, when people get old, they become these different, wiser people. That was not my experience. I felt that in some ways they became sort of concentrated versions of themselves, you know, more, maybe more, a little more calcified in their roles. I mean, my mother was very, she had been an assistant principal, and she was very opinionated. She was very, she's like the, was the most strong and is the most strong-willed person I have ever met in my life. Nobody even comes close. And my father was very sweet and I think empathetic, but kind of he was a little bit, I hate to say it, but like dominated by her.
Yeah.
She was a sort of fearsome person. I mean, we both were. And that was what it was like when I was growing up. And I got away. You know, I went to college, and then I never lived at home again. I got out from under in certain ways, but they continued, of course, to live together in their, you know, forever.
You have a line in the book that I just found very simple, but yet so powerful, which is, one of the worst parts of senility must be that you have to get terrible news over and over again.
Yeah, but on the other hand, in between, maybe you get to forget. You
yes.
know, I mean, that's sort of one of the things with my father at the end was that when my mother went into the hospital, he was living with us for a couple of weeks because he couldn't live on his own. And he would forget. It was so heartbreaking. It was so awful. He would forget where my mother was. And he'd say, "Where's Mom?" And then I'd tell him that she was in the hospital. And he would completely go to pieces. And then he would he'd remember it, like what had happened and why he was, you know. And then a few hours later, he'd forget again. And, yeah, it was sad, you know.
And you, I mean, you really put that into perspective because you talk about, you know, just dinner time being tough, of watching him try to cut with a knife and just very simple things that you spend time watching and it's a really tough thing to get through.
It is, but, you know, it had its moments of comedy, and one of the ways that I put this book together was that there are a few pieces in it, far from the majority, but there were a few cartoons in it that I had done, you know, years before I had ever thought about putting a book like this together, like the one with my mother with her, you know, theory of heel height versus sexual availability. I don't know if you remember that one,
yes.
But she's telling me all about this friend of hers who is in her 80s. Well, she says, you know, you can tell how available a woman is by the height of the heels of her shoes. And then she starts telling you about some friend of hers who's in an assisted living place and always wears the highest heels, and she is always surrounded by men. And, but this cartoon I did, you know, well before they were, you know, had entered these final stages. You know, my parents were interesting and funny people, and even when they were, you know, in their, not complete full decrepitude, but, you know, heading that way, they were funny things. I mean, taking my father shopping for underwear when he saw those new style ads. He hadn't been clothes shopping in decades, and he wasn't used to these new style of underwear, male underwear models with a waxed chests and the first, and even like the bare chests in the ads, the waxed chest and the giant pecs. So we're in the underwear department of the store, and he looks at this ad, which is this like hairless, giant chested, giant pecked man, and he does this double take, and I said, "Dad, what?" And he goes, "I don't understand. It looks like that man has breasts." You know, he had not he was not familiar with the new style of giant pecs. And that was, I did that as a cartoon. I mean, that was funny. So you know, there were moments of, to me, you know, comedy, and there's something of a black comedy in this. I mean,
oh, absolutely.
You know, in the whole thing, not in the suffering, of course, but just the absurdity of the whole situation. You know, I mean, there's just absolutely no point to this. You know, you get born, and then you get older, and you get really decrepit, and then you die, and it's just absurd.
You include some incredible pictures from your parents' apartment.
Oh yeah.
With just these old things. One of my favorites was from the of the refrigerator. Your mother had a thing called a cheese tainer.
The cheese tainer. She was very proud of that because, you know, we were in this little apartment, and I'm sure that there's lots of refrigerators now that have all kinds of like fancy compartments and stuff, but you know, this was just like your basic refrigerator that came with the apartment in, you know, 1959, and it didn't have all these compartments. So she bought this plastic container with like a sliding top, and she called it the cheese tainer. But what made it so extra special was that she just used this thing for decades. And so, of course, plastic is just, it is meant to be thrown away and ruin our environment in some land dump somewhere and, like, never decompose. That's the purpose of plastic, is to, like, never decompose in a landfill. She never, it would fall apart. It was, like, cracked. It was patched with masking tape. And she had it was probably about 40 years old.
Mm.
You know, but you know, there are reasons for this. My parents were born in 1912. They grew up poor. They graduated from college into the Depression. And, you know, waste not, want not. If you could still slide the top of the cheese tainer, so you patched it with masking tape, so what?
You, there are some very intense photos that you drew of your parents at the very end of their life.
Yes.
And is that something you felt? I mean, is that almost part of the grieving process for you of doing that to have that for yourself?
I don't think I really thought about reasons while I was doing it. I think I just really felt that I needed to do it, and I didn't know why. I mean, part of it was that at that point, I mean, it wasn't really drawings of my father. It was just these drawings of my mother. She had sort of been in that state for a long time,
right,
and I didn't know how much longer it was going to continue. You know, it went on for months, and I would just go to the place where she was in bed and not talking and draw her, because it was something to do while I was with her. And also, I wanted to really look at her. And it was a way of remembering her, but there was also really, she wasn't really talking, and I wanted to spend time with her.
The book is beautiful, and it's so memorable and touching. It's and very funny. It's Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant, a memoir. It is published by Bloomsbury. Roz Chass, thank you so much for sharing with us and for sharing the book as well.
Thank you.
A great pleasure. Thank you. Again, the title of the book, Can't We Talk About Something More Pleasant? A memoir published by Bloomsbury. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.